have that open in front of you. If I was to go out today and ask random people down the street what their priority is in life, what's your number one priority in life, I'm sure we would get a whole range of answers. Many of them good answers and noble answers, honourable answers. Family, work, caring for others, my health, that's my priority, my fitness, so on, so on. But if I was to ask Christians that question, what is your number one priority in life? There should be only one answer, just one answer. I wonder what you would think the Christian's first and foremost single priority in life should be. Well, the good news is Jesus is going to tell us this morning. We're going to hear Jesus telling us this morning what our priority should be in life. And if we've been missing the mark, he's being very gracious to us today. He's giving us breath in our bodies today that we might change, that we might respond to his word, that we might reprioritize. And the Lord's Supper often does this for us as Christians, doesn't it? The Lord's Supper is an opportunity for us to reassess, to recalibrate, to refocus, to reset, to reprioritize. It's a reminder, isn't it, how easily we can get distracted, how easily we can get disjointed in the Christian life. It highlights to us how we can so often fail to keep the main thing, the main thing. And to bring us to the Lord's table next week, we're taking as our theme the words at the feet of Jesus. That's our theme for this morning and then the two services next week, at the feet of Jesus. And we're going to be considering very especially the actions of one person, one woman, in fact, who every time when this woman is mentioned in the Bible, every time she's mentioned, we find her at the feet of Jesus. Her name's Mary. Not Mary Magdalene, not Mary the mother of Jesus, but Mary, sister of Martha, sister of Lazarus. Mary, she lived in a village called Bethany. She's sometimes called Mary of Bethany. And the three times Mary is mentioned in the Bible, every time she's found at the feet of Jesus. The three times. Here, when Jesus comes to the house of Martha. Later, when Lazarus dies, Jesus comes. We find Mary falling at his feet, weeping. And then again, afterwards, we find Mary anointing Jesus' feet with expensive perfume. And so it's my hope, it's my prayer that this little three-part series, it might be that it might bring us in a real and profound sense to the feet of Jesus. That we might be brought down very low. That we might be brought very close to the one who is our life, the one who is our joy, the one who is our everything. By God's grace, we're going to find at his feet a place of sympathy. We're going to find a place of sacrifice. We're going to find a place of submission. We're going to find a place of service. But this morning, to set us up for remembering the Lord's death, we find a place of stillness. A place of stillness this morning. Because it's here in this passage, Luke 10, 38 to 42, Jesus speaks about our priorities. I think most of us are familiar with the story. It's a wonderful little event in the life of Jesus. It appears nowhere else in the Gospels when he visits the home of Mary and Martha. What a privilege for these women. Jesus Christ in their house, under their roof, God incarnate, speaking to them, teaching. What a privilege. But we're going to see this was a privilege one sister lost sight of, and it was a privilege one sister made much of. Mary is the one at Jesus' feet, drinking in everything he's saying. Martha, however, is caught up with preparing and serving. And she becomes more and more frustrated with her sister Mary. She eventually bursts into Jesus. The language is very graphic. She bursts in and she effectively orders Jesus to rebuke Mary. Verse 40, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do this alone? Tell her to help me, Jesus." And Jesus does respond with a word of rebuke, but not to Mary at his feet, but to Martha. And it is a gentle rebuke, but a rebuke none the same. "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her." And the thing is, I think there's something in all of us that instinctively sympathizes with Martha. We all know people like Mary, don't we? People who are quite happy to let others do the work. Why should Martha have to do everything all by herself? But whether we sympathize her or not, that's really not the issue. Jesus clearly speaks a word of correction to Martha. He tells Martha that it's time for her to sit down and listen. There's no debate as far as Jesus is concerned. Martha has the wrong priorities. Martha has the wrong priorities. She's so busy doing other things, even things for Jesus, to the extent she misses out on the one thing that was necessary, being with Jesus. Being with Jesus. And friends, I've been challenged this week, and I think there is the great danger that we can fall into exactly the same mindset ourselves. This passage isn't about cooking versus praying. It's not about the active life versus the life of contemplation. It's not about that. It's about the divided life versus the focused life. It's living a life of frantic activity, or it's a life centered on knowing Christ. And we should be asking ourselves this morning in our service to Christ, am I missing the one thing that's necessary, Jesus says? Am I missing intimacy with him? Let's look closer then at Mary and Martha's priorities. Just 2 points from the passage. Firstly, Mary's priority. Mary's priority. Mary, of course, the one at Jesus' feet. Mary's priority. What is it Jesus says about Mary's priority, about Mary's choice? Verse 42, the end of the text, verse 42. "Mary has chosen the good portion," Jesus says. Mary's chosen the good portion. Now, what is the good portion? Well, in the Bible, when it talks about our portion, over and over again, it simply means knowing God. It means being near to God. It means having God as our portion, the good portion. We sang Psalm 16, 5 and 6. "The Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. The lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance." Or Lamentations 3:24, "The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in him." And Jesus is saying, in other words, "Martha, Martha, Mary, your sister, she's chosen me as her portion. She's chosen the good portion. She's got me. She's made me her number one priority. And it's the good choice, Martha." You see, when you choose to follow the Lord, and now please understand it, I'm using Jesus' language here about choice And I am not underplaying God's sovereignty in that. When I talk about choosing the Lord, the Bible does make clear we love him because he first loved us. Nonetheless, there is an action on our part. We are held responsible for what we do with the gospel. So when we choose to follow the Lord, that affects a lot of other choices we make, doesn't it? When you choose Christ, it'll have influence on all the choices in with connection with how you spend your time or how you spend your money or how you spend yourself. When you choose the Lord as your portion, you'll choose to go to the house of God on the Lord's day. You'll choose to go to the prayer meeting. You'll choose to pick up and read his word. You'll choose to honor the Lord's day above the others. You'll choose the people of God to be your bestest friends. All those choices reveal that God is your portion. They reveal where your heart lies. And not least in your desire to listen to the word of Christ. Jesus said in John 10:27, "My sheep hear my voice. My sheep hear my voice." In other words, there should be this special, this deep bond between you and the Lord. And you should love to hear his voice. You should love to hear his voice. Isn't that what we see in Mary here? She finds a place at the feet of Jesus. A place of stillness where she can hear. She can drink in what he's saying to her. And Jesus says she's chosen the good portion. She's got her priorities sorted out. And friends, as we come to the Lord's table next Lord's Day, we do well to ask ourselves today, what about me? What about my priorities? Are they like Mary's at all? Do I have this same desire? Do I have anything like this desire? Do I wish to be found hearing the word of Christ? Do I long to hear his voice to me? Am I found turning to his word at home in a place of stillness, sitting at his feet, as it were? Am I found sitting around his word with my family? Am I gathering my family to gather at the feet of Jesus? When his word is being opened up here in this building, by the person God's appointed for me, am I eager to be found in the house of God, as it were, sitting by the feet of Jesus, drinking it in? Jesus says something interesting at the end of 42. Mary has chosen the good portion which will not be taken away from her. In other words, you could lose everything else in life, but nothing can take you from Christ. And nothing can take Christ from you. People might rip you out of the church. They might rip you out of your home. They might rip you away from your family. You might lose your job. You might lose a child. You might lose your health. You might lose your wealth. But no one can take you from Christ. And no one can take Christ from you. With Christ as the epicenter of your life, nothing can separate you from him. Mary's priority, it's Christ, being with Jesus, being near Jesus, listening to Jesus, loving Jesus, adoring Jesus, glorifying and enjoying Jesus. He says, Mary has chosen the good portion. I wonder, could he say the same of you today? I wonder, could he say the same of me? He, she, that they've chosen the good portion. Mary's priority. Let's look then, Martha's priority. Martha's priority. Because of course, when Jesus says Mary has chosen the good portion, it implies, doesn't it, Martha hasn't. It implies that Martha has got her choices mixed up. She's got her priorities mixed up. Even though she's opened up her home to Jesus, even though she's busied herself with preparing and setting to feed Jesus, he says Mary's or Martha's lacking something. Verse 41. Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things. How many of us can relate to that? Anxious and troubled about many things. The world is full of things that can make us anxious and troubled. We have all sorts of things going on in our lives that could make us worried and bothered. Verse 40 tells us even more about Martha. Martha was distracted with much serving. This word distracted, it means to be pulled away. It means to be split down the middle, to be dragged away. She's fussing around with the food. She's doing whatever needed to be done. And she's being pulled away. Pulled away from what? She's being pulled away from listening to Jesus. From being with Jesus. She's being pulled away from Jesus by the sheer busyness of life. And I know there's lots of us here who can relate to Martha. I know many of you have busy, hectic lifestyles, non-stop from the moment you get up to the moment you rest your heads. And there can be so much in our lives that can make us busy and worried and anxious and troubled, to fill our lives with anxiety. Troubled and anxious about so many things. Things in our families, things in our work, things in our relationships, things with our relatives, things in our nation. Like Martha. Like Martha, we could be busy with good things, dutiful things, the responsibilities that lie in front of us. We could be busy among the people of God. We could be busy in the church. Busy in service to Christ. And yet Jesus could still say, you don't have the one thing that's necessary. You don't have the one thing that's necessary. Isn't that a solemn thought this morning? Your life could be full of church, but empty of Christ. Isn't that a somber thing? Your desire to serve Christ could actually pull you away from time with Christ. What is good can distract you from what is best. Now, how do we know if we're a Martha or a Mary? It's a burning question. It's a question I've been wrestling with this week. How do we know if we're a Martha or a Mary? I think, friends, the acid test comes to our attitude when it comes to listening to the word of Christ. It's our attitude to listening to the word of Christ. Martha just couldn't stop to listen. She couldn't stop to listen. She couldn't see the importance of listening to the Lord. It came down the list in her priorities. Even though the things she's doing are very, very good things, she was neglecting the number one. She was neglecting Jesus' words, the one thing that was needful, the one thing that was necessary. Good things, but at the wrong time. I know actually of a gospel minister who, when he was a student for the ministry, he had a very similar experience to this very one. He went to one church and he'd been told that one of the families that were giving him lunch as after the morning worship. So after the service, he was introduced to the father, the dad of the home. And the minister agreed just to follow the husband's car to the house, thinking that the mother had gone home earlier with the children. But that wasn't what had happened, actually. He arrived at the house to find that the mother of the home, had just missed church that morning, staying at home with the children because she had to prepare a special lunch for the minister who was coming over. It's almost a modern-day parable of this incident in Luke. So she was doing something that was good, something that was helpful, but at the expense of something that was better. She missed out on something that was better and actually necessary. In her efforts to look after a servant of Christ, she chose not to hear the voice of Christ that morning. And I can assure you, in that situation, the minister, he would have far preferred a cheese sandwich rather than the lavish meal that had been prepared. Wrong priorities. Good things, but the wrong time. Wrong priorities. And it's Mary at the feet of Jesus who chooses the good portion. Something Jesus says will not be taken away from her. That suggests, doesn't it, that the things that were spinning around in Martha's head, they would one day all be taken away. They wouldn't last forever. They weren't of eternal significance and value. And she was neglecting the one thing that was screaming out for her attention. She was so privileged. She had the word of Christ so near, and she neglected the one thing necessary. Friends, the word of Christ today is screaming out for your attention. And every day it calls at you to come and sit at his feet. In a great sense, every week with the gathered people of God in our morning and our evening services, it calls you to come and sit at the Master's feet. Like Mary and Martha, we have an immense privilege. We can hear the voice of Jesus speaking to us. And I know there are genuine and valid reasons why some of us can't make it to morning and evening worship services. I just wonder, do all of our excuses, do they all stack up? Do all of our excuses on a Sunday night stand up to this test? At the end of the day, what could be better? What could be better than sitting at Christ's feet? And even when we're here, doesn't mean we've got it sorted out. Even when we're here, when we're exposed to his voice, how often we're distracted by other things, thinking about jobs and duties. Even right now, your mind could be wandering off. Yes, there are so many other things you could be doing. Yes, we might be anxious and troubled about many things. But are we neglecting the one thing necessary, the place of stillness at the Master's feet? And do you know, isn't that what Jesus says is the answer to anxiety and trouble and worry? The answer is to sit at his feet. It's as if he says to Martha, would you not come to this place of stillness? Would you not free yourself of those anxieties and those troubles? In a church in Copenhagen, there's a life-sized granite sculpture of Jesus by a Danish artist named Thors Walden. Now, despite the fact it's an image of Jesus, not something I was in a quandary whether to include this or not, especially after our doctrine class this morning, which covered the subject. But despite the fact it's an image of Jesus, the idea behind the sculpture is interesting. So this sculpture in Copenhagen is shaped in such a way that you can't see the face when you're in a standing position. You can't see the face of Jesus if you're standing looking at it. But next to the statue, there's a sign that reads, if you want to see the face of Jesus, you must sit at his feet. If you want to see the face of Jesus, you must sit at his feet. And sure enough, apparently, if you get down to the foot of the statue, you can look up and you can clearly see the face of Jesus. Isn't there a great spiritual truth there? If you want to see the face of Jesus, you sit at his feet. If you want to feel the Lord's face shining down on you, you come and sit at his feet. And it's a simple thing. A child can do it. A mother can do it. A father can do it. Someone who's single can do it. A widow can do it. A teenager can do it. Anyone with a heart for Christ can do it. You don't have to be able to sing or preach to sit at his feet. You don't have to be outgoing and bubbly to sit at his feet. You don't have to have lots of money or lots of gifts to sit at his feet. Anyone can do it. Don't you wonder what Martha did in response to Jesus' words? We're not told for sure. We don't really know. We're not told. But I think she did put away the things that distracted her. I think she sat down there and then at the feet of Jesus. Why do I think that? Well, after all, a word from Christ is all it takes, isn't it? A word from Christ is all it takes. I think from that moment, she took her place at his feet and she hung on his every word. And maybe there's proof of that. For the next time we find Martha is in John 11, when their brother Lazarus has just died. We're told in John 11:19 that many, many people come to this home to console Mary and Martha in their loss. It's actually a proof text for visiting people's homes in the time of bereavement. This is what we find in John 11. And many, many people come and visit and console Mary and Martha in their loss. And you could well imagine, if you've been there, you'll know, you could well imagine the busyness, the things that would need to be done. Martha could have made herself so busy in that home on that occasion. But yet, in the very next verse, John 11:20, we read, "When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him." We can imagine she dropped everything and she went and met him. She got her priorities sorted out, I'm convinced. A word from Jesus was a word of life to Martha's troubled and anxious soul. Martha got herself sorted out. Wouldn't it be good? Wouldn't it be good if you heard a word of life to your soul this morning, friend? Are you here finding yourself distracted with many, many things? Worried, troubled, anxious? Jesus is calling you to choose the one thing that you really need, the thing that nobody can ever take away from you. Him. Him. May God help each of us more and more to know this place of stillness, sitting together at the Master's feet. Amen.